Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Match Ball.
The Match Ball 30 is sponsored by Calidus, leading consultants in health and safety, project management, asset management, environmental services and training. Visit wearecalidus.com for more information. Dan, Michael and Moscow on the Match Ball 30, where we chart the journey through the 1991-1992 season, game by game in real time, 30 years on. And hello to you. And which is going to be the best chart-topping televised performance this weekend? Is it going to be the video for new chart number one, Michael Jackson, Black or White? Have you seen that video?
How have they done it?
It's amazing, isn't it? Or is it going to be Leeds United at Aston Villa?
How have we done it? I know a couple of games ago when we did draw with Wimbledon, I did say our title challenge was over and we'd be lucky to finish in the European places.
Going to win the league, it turns out, aren't
we? Turns out we're brilliant.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Good news weekend for your old Terry Waite as well. He's not chained to a radiator anymore. He's been freed, been set free back into the wide world.
That's good. Get home to tend to his allotment.
Yeah, and he can come home, presumably. First thing he's going to have done, flicked on ITV, seen Leeds United taking apart Aston Villa.
Will he have been appalled by the fact that it's not 3 o'clock on a Saturday, do you think? Is he a traditionalist in that respect?
Well, I mean, do you think it impacted the crowd? I mean, look at that. It's only 23,700 turned up. I was sat at home watching it on telly in the West Midlands.
I thought you meant Terry Waite's release, like everybody would be at home celebrating that, so nobody wanted to watch.
I mean,
Aston Villa.
They were as well.
I wonder if they had to explain to him what Leeds United did at Bournemouth, because with his experience coming out of 1980s Beirut, he might have been able to relate.
Well, the lineups for this televised game for Leeds United, slightly strange, but we'll come on to that when we've got through the list of names. John Lukic in goal. We've got Mel Sterling, Tony DiRigo, David Batty, Chris Fairclough, Chris White, Gordon Strachan, Rod Wallace, Lee Chapman, Gary McAllister. That's your 1-10. Number 11, John McClelland with Carl Schutt and Steve Hodge
on
the bench.
It's a sick joke, putting John McClelland at number 11.
Number 11, that pacey left winger.
Up and down the line. It's where he belongs, isn't it? Yes. Interesting move. Well, it's...
Let's do the Villa lineup and then you will understand.
Reveal everything,
yeah,
won't it?
The big secret. Yeah, so Villa, Les Seeley, the angriest goalkeeper in the Western Hemisphere. Again, we'll come on to that in due course. Sean Teal, Darius Kubicki, who... He came in on trial to us, didn't he, last season?
He did, when Legia Warsaw were over playing scum in the European Cup Winners' Cup. They left him to have a trial with us for a match, which was quite an odd little manoeuvre, but obviously rubbish, otherwise we would have signed him.
Steve Staunton, Paul McGrath, we've got Mark Blake, Kevin Richardson, Tony Daly, Cyril Regis, Daly and Atkinson, Dwight York completing their 11, and it's Tony Daly was the one we need to watch out of this, and this is why we have John McClelland at 11. We're doing fancy things, aren't we?
Yeah, previously it's been Michael Whitlow's job to keep an eye on Tony Daly, whose pace is extraordinary in the First Division. He's a very fast right winger normally. But unfortunately, although you could argue that Tony DiRigo has been an improvement on Mike Whitlow in some ways, pace is just not one of them. And I think general defensive capabilities, you can't trust DiRigo with Tony Daly. So in previous matches, Mike Whitlow's done a man-marking job on Daly and not given him a sniff. And Howard Wilkinson has seen that worked. But this time, he's entrusted the job to Chris Fairclough, which means John McClelland, wearing 11, will be playing centre-back alongside Chris White. Tony DiRigo and Mel Sterling will still be our full-backs, so the back four is as normal. But Chris Fairclough won't be in the back four. He'll just be following Tony Daly around.
He's got a free role. As long as his free role is to follow Tony Daly.
Essentially, yeah. And I mean, the way it turned out, I think he got one opportunity. He was absolutely magnificent in this, Chris Fairclough. And what a plan to basically say, we'll turn this down to 10 versus 10. but you lose, Villa lose their best and most dangerous player, and we just lose a defender.
I mean, man for man marking. I wonder if that's ever going to catch on.
I think it's all right to do it on the odd occasion for like one player, but doing it all over the pitch would be suicidal, I would say.
And crazy, isn't it?
Be spending marking Dennis Wise or something. When we play Chelsea, we've got to go man to man against him. I don't think it's quite necessary. But Daly is a very dangerous. Do you remember his goal against Everton? Daly's dazzler, where it's across from the right and he meets it full on the volley. It's an incredible finish. So he can do that kind of stuff, but not with Chris Fairclough stepping on his toes all game.
And Villa, let's not forget, they're coming into this on a good run of form because they're not too far off our coattails, fourth in the league, but 6 points behind us. Big Ron's in charge there. Do you remember the communist, Dr. Joseph Venglos? He got sacked and Big Ron Atkinson has come in and changes have been afoot.
Jewellery, mainly.
Yeah.
Extra gold on him. But yes, he has changed the entire side, which maybe needed doing, given we beat them 5-2 last season. Maybe he's improved them. Maybe he hasn't. Who knows? But yeah, completely different team. £5.5 million this old David Platt for, which is...
That's massive amount, isn't it?
Silly money. He's gone off to Syria. But yeah, he's brought in
Syria, not Syria.
Yes,
because you might be causing flashbacks for Terry White there.
But yeah, he's gone back to Cyril Regis as Ron Atkinson, the creative old bastard there. Yeah, he's knocking on a bit, isn't he, old Cyril? But still able to do a job some weeks.
Atkinson, he left Sheffield Wednesday because he won promotion. Then he got that Rumbelows Cup against Scum. Remember Chez scored that winner?
Very nice.
But he's up sticks and gone down the whatever road it is that leads from Sheffield to Birmingham. It's probably going to be the A42, isn't it? He's going to go down a bit and across.
M6 or something, maybe?
So I don't know.
Who knows?
Everything south of Sheffield, I'm not interested.
It is a bit of a greatest hits team for Ron Atkinson as well, because he signed his, not his son, Delian Atkinson. Everyone has to always stress that they're not related, just the same name. But he had him at Sheffield Wednesday and obviously had Cyril Regis at West Brom back in the day. £1.6 million for Daley Atkinson, and they spent £450,000 on Kevin Richardson, £1.1 million on Steve Staunton from Liverpool, £200,000 Darius Kubicki cost, who we didn't want, loads of others. Les Seeley was free from Scum, but... Yeah, they've put the Platts and Tony Cascarino money to rapid use.
And he's still got Paul McGrath as well, who he describes as the best centre-back in the world, who he obviously had at Scum as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit like... It's interesting that he left Sheffield Wednesday after bringing them up, because Howard Wilkinson was obviously at Sheffield Wednesday a long time, and one of the reasons he left them to come to Leeds was total lack of ambition, and that he thought he had them in a position in the first division where they could crack on and win the league, and the board weren't interested in that and ended up getting relegated. He came to Leeds and reunited all the Chapman, Verardi. He always wanted Strachan at Sheffield Wednesday, as did Ron Atkinson in the end, Mel Sterland, all those kind of players who he's had before. And I think Ron Atkinson's come up against a similar kind of wall, got Sheffield Wednesday promoted. Right, what are we going to do? Nothing. Right, I'll go to Aston Villa then, because they're going to spend loads of money.
And we're on telly, which is exciting, isn't it? The Sunday big match. Have you heard he was on co-commentary? Is he delivering this in English?
Is that deserter?
Traitor to the nation, is he?
I would say so. He's succumbing to the lure of the yen. That's how the YEP describe his actions. But yeah, England's hero, Gary Lineker.
31 going to Japan. He's effectively retired. Shocking behaviour.
Brand new. They don't even have a league yet, is it? The team he's going to, Grampus 8, have not played a single match because the league is all brand new. So
we've seen their kit though, it's like Roy of the Rovers stuff, isn't it?
Big step into the unknown for him, but yeah, why not dip your toe in Japan?
He's very near the England scoring record though, so if he gets booted out of the team as a result of it, he could regret it.
Who would you put in though if he doesn't make it? I mean, the YEP putting a few names forward.
I mean, I'd put Chapman in, yeah, personally. I know, get a youngster in, that's what I say. I mean, the YEP are saying Alan Shearer or David Hurst.
I mean, Shearer. No, I'm not sure he's that good.
Hurst is the man you want to go for of the two, if you're going to back one of them.
Well, yeah. If you want a goal scorer, then it's Lee Chapman, surely.
That's what you just said, yeah.
So I just say, I mean, I would, or Wallace, maybe, if he can prove that.
Both of them.
If he can stay fit for more than 5 minutes.
Shutty.
Outside bet.
Him with Verardi.
He'd work hard, wouldn't he?
Right.
I think Verardi still might want his Italy call-up.
To the game, then, and Gary Lineker whispering sweet nothings in our ear, out of our telly speaker, as we... make a bit of a scrappy start. What do you make to it?
We were just feeling our way into it, I think. There's obviously a bit of a different system in place with Fairclough doing his thing, and it doesn't feel like anyone has particular hold over it in the first 20 minutes. Mm. I think our midfield doesn't seem all that connected to begin with. And then as the game goes on, McAllister and Strachan just kind of take control of it. And that's when we really start to steamroll them.
I mean, because we do that opening 20 minutes salvo normally, don't we, where we kind of try and grab these games by the scruff of the neck, but that's not the case in this one. If you get a few corners, but nothing too clear cut, because you'd expect, you'd hope to capitalise on Chapman's heading ability as England's new number nine, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the first chance doesn't come until sort of 20 minutes in, when it is a long kick from Lukic, which Sterling flicks on and puts Wallace through, which it is a really good save, actually, from Seeley, and which he is then... Is that the first time he's furious?
He really enjoys that save, doesn't he? He's very happy that being able to show off his goalkeeping skills. Les Seeley just looks angry by default, but I think this is the first time his resting Seeley face was transformed into an actual protest against Paul McGrath and Cole.
I think he's particularly furious because he makes the first save, and then I can't remember how the ball somehow ends up back with Sterling, who shoots
a chance to reset himself and calm down.
Who shoots from about 30 yards, and I think he's really pissed off that they're allowing Mel Sterling to shoot from 30 yards and the first chance and his life.
And he's angry about that again.
The way the whole thing's panned out for him, he's just not very happy.
One long disappointment, a series of disappointments that turn into one mass disappointment that is Les Seeley's life. And then we're at it again just a minute later with some nice stuff here going on with Strachan Mac.
He shouldn't be disappointed because he's having a good game at this point, is Les Seeley. Another good save from, we end up getting a corner after some nice interplay with Strachan and McAllister. And Strachan's corner is kind of, I don't know if White gets a touch or whether it just bounces in front at the near post, but by the time it gets to Chapman, the ball's a little bit high for him and he does get ahead on it, but he can't quite get enough power. But it's a decent save from Seeley.
They have a chance then shortly after that. Deep ball. Not much in this really, is there? Sterling, is he going to get caught by the offside here?
Well, he's trying to play York offside, but he kind of gets it.
Fast as Dwight York. You've got to be quicker than that, Mel.
He kind of gets it wrong. So he's moving forward as the ball is going in behind him. But he doesn't quite strike it properly, doesn't York? It's still a decent save from Lukic with his foot. But we do kind of get away with one because he's not caught it cleanly.
Well, heading in towards half time. Sort of just feeling each other out, but it does feel like we've had the lion's share of this. We've been the better side, generally speaking, would you agree?
Yeah, we've definitely been on top. I mean, for as much as the openings are a bit scrappy, we are in control at this point.
And we get the goal just before half-time. 41 minutes on the clock, and it is 1-0. You could argue this one has been coming. So talk us through this long-range effort that's coming from Rod Wallace. I mean, brilliant finish.
I mean, it's a Wallace goal, but it's the Chapman goal we've seen lots of times before, essentially. It's Strachan passing it to Sterling, crossing. Chapman with a great header that very nearly goes in.
Yeah, everyone was winding up for the long Sterling throw. But he's always thinking his Mel, or at least he's always got Gordon Strachan telling him what to do. So, they created it. And I think Wallace is absolutely right to claim that goal.
I mean,
it wouldn't have happened without him.
The camera angle, like, that's square onto the post, like side on, it probably wouldn't have snuck in the header from Chapman, would it? You know, the save that Seeley's made.
And it's a brilliant save. That's to be said. It's one of those that if...
Which makes the outcome even funnier,
if
really.
If little Rodney's not there to tap it in, it is one that you'd probably see replays of.
It was a defender coming back as well, wasn't there? So he had to win it.
But yeah, this is from, I'd say, a maximum of 6 inches out.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it
studs
looks,
on it.
It looks pretty much on the line.
And he enjoyed it, and he's scoring. That's the important thing. Doesn't matter whether it's 6 yards, 6 inches, or 60 yards. Not that many go in from 60 yards, but, you know, you catch the point. And then a minute later, Seeley obviously very, very calm about the goal. Batty has a shot from 25 yards out, 42 minutes on the clock. He's raging once again.
I mean, allowing Batty space to shoot from 25 yards is, I suppose it is a relatively safe strategy, generally speaking. So maybe Les needs to wind his neck in.
It does seem to be the one part of the pitch that Aston Villa haven't really got a grip on is midfield, because they've spent all that money but ended up with, they've got Mark Blake.
He's rubbish, by the way.
Who is rubbish? 20-year-old. I think he's played England under 21s. And as we've seen in the second half, Gordon Cowan comes on, who just about qualifies for England under 41s. And then it's Kevin Richardson. It's not a good midfield. Mark Blake and Kevin Richardson up against David Batty and Gary McAllister. So it's no wonder that we're just doing what we want in that part of the pitch while Les Seeley deals with it all being hit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And speaking of the pitch, bit of a pudding, isn't it? And we've seen something a little bit wild happen there as the halftime whistle's gone. Everyone making their way back to the dressing rooms. And there's Wilco being collared on the way down towards the tunnel, being interviewed, and he's worried about the state of this pitch.
There's no need to speak to him now, is there?
I think he's worried about Gary Newbon sticking a microphone in his face when he's off to do his halftime team talk. There's very much a hint of resignation and not playing along with Wilco here, because Newbon, I think, wants something, you know. Oh, that goal just before half time. That's, what are you going to do for the second half? And Wilco's just like, I don't like the pitch. I've seen a good pitch at Villa Park before, but I don't think the pitch is very good. Cheers, Howard. Keep watching ITV, everybody.
Back for more after these ads. And then straight from the kickoff, we win a corner in the second half. We go about it. We mean business. Whatever he did say in that dressing room at half time, it certainly worked, because it's 2-0 after 47 minutes as well.
Delightful timing of the goals. Just ruin the half time team talk before and then render it absolutely redundant within a couple of minutes. And it's a bit of a classic Leeds goal, is this again, isn't it? Strachan to the near post, flicked on. The flying pig flying in, heads it in from 6 yards.
A beautiful sequence of headers. Yeah, White with the flick on. Mel Sterling just throwing himself at it. And this one is, yeah, 6 yards out rather than 6 inches. But a nice finish, and he enjoyed it. He's scoring more goals than you give him credit for, is Mel, this year.
He is, and not just against Sheffield United.
Les Seeley took it well.
Yeah, I mean,
come on, lads, we can get back into this, never mind. No, he's absolutely furious, isn't he?
Doesn't get any better for him either. 56 minutes, no. Game over. And another goal from a corner, but this time I'd say this is a silky continental-style corner.
This is wizardry.
I mean, we've seen them try it before. If you remember, there were a couple of games last season. I think it was the Everton game and at least one other where Strachan and McAllister had a little go at this. It didn't come off. And then here it is, and it is absolutely magnificent.
So it's a corner in the far right corner as we look at it from the telly cameras. And Strachan, little tap out to McAllister, pulls in the two men who come to deal with the short corner, don't they? Strachan, just staying on side, just trots down the byline. And gets a little reverse pass from McAllister. Beautiful.
It's a back heel.
It's like a drag under the foot, isn't it, that he does?
So good.
And I think, in fairness, it's the defenders on the line are obviously expecting a cross and don't push out, which allows Strachan to
sort of float in that gap.
Just stay onside in that big pocket of space that they've left. And the two defenders, I mean, if we do this all the time, people will get used to it, but the two defenders, they're just drawn into McAllister so easily.
Both of them, idiots.
They are idiots. Yeah. Exactly what they are.
Yeah, back heels it to Strachan, who trots along the line a little bit. And then it's actually quite a narrow little corridor that he's got there, but it's the Chapman corridor. We know that because there are people both on the line holding the posts and then holding the 6 yard box. And Chapman is just stood between them in a little 3 yard space. And Strach just toe ends it into that gap. Chapman taps it in, 3-0, game over. Beautiful. What a nice goal.
It's how he gets to that position, Chapman, as well. There's a beautiful movement from Chapman and White. As soon as the corner's taken, and you can tell it's all pre-planned, because as soon as the corner's taken, Chapman and White both run away and they're both off. And it's so coordinated, you know that's going to be part of the routine as well. It's not just what Strachan and McAllister are doing with the ball. It's what they're doing to get out of the six-yard box and then come back in again. The whole thing is planned absolutely beautifully. And the fact that it took place right in front of the away end as well. And with it being a corner, you've basically got every player apart from John Lukic in and around the penalty area. Just means everybody's piling into the front of the away fans to celebrate. And there's nothing, I think, Strachan and McAllister in particular, having pulled that off and planned it and practiced it and got it wrong a couple of times before, finally it working, the delight. There's nothing a Howard Wilkinson team loves more than scoring a rehearsed corner kick, especially one that's got a little bit of brains and skill to it like this one. It's absolutely superb.
And you just know we're going to remember this one from years to come. Just funny, like you're saying, its execution, but also so stylish. And well, we're not done there. We could make it four a minute later, and we're running rampant at this point, and what a performance.
I mean, McGrath takes a sensible yellow, doesn't he? Because Wallace and Chapman are both through, and he could, just before he has a chance to square it to Chapman, he does bring him down. And I think then Gordon Strachan ends up speaking to the referee saying, "Nah, don't send him off," because there's some debate as to whether Wallace is through, and yeah. Strachan's like, "Nah."
Because we've had all the professional foul rules have come in, haven't they, of course? Like we saw some, I can't remember which game it was.
It was Neil Ruddock being sent off at Southampton, and then at the end of the game, Strachan,
like, shouldn't have gone, should he?
Said that, yeah,
ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. It had been sent off, and that there's too many red cards, and it's spoiling the game. And I've got Strachan played with McGrath at Scum as well. So they're mates. And I know you were scoffed slightly at Ron Atkinson's assessment of McGrath as the best centre-back in the world. I think he's actually really good in this game. Not just, he deals with Wallace better than you'd think for somebody who doesn't have any knees. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, you've got, I don't know if it's fair to factor into his quality the fact that he doesn't train because he's got no knees, and he's sadly an alcoholic, which I think the two things are not conducive to top level athletic performance, but he manages to pull it off magnificently. And the number of times Rod Wallace and sometimes even Lee Chapman from goal kicks get caught offside is also down to having an excellent centre back, just going push up, doing all the timing stuff. So he's very, you can see what Ron Atkinson means and why him and Jack Charlton loves him for Ireland as well. Put so much faith in somebody who essentially turns up on match days and is hopefully fit to play.
So an hour into this game, you know, final week of November 1991, an hour in, and the away end is singing, "And now you're going to believe us, we're going to win the league." Is this the moment, do you think, when people are starting just to believe and to think that it could be our year with performances like this?
Well, Villa were supposed to be outsiders for the league, or not really outsiders, but, you know, they've got a top manager that spent all that money. They are in the top four and having a really good start of the season. They're the ones who probably have a more glamorous profile than Leeds. I mean, Ron Atkinson wears sunglasses in the dark. So you can't get much.
And his big coat, let's not forget his big coat that he teams it up with.
I mean, you need it because...
And he works in Spain.
It's flash
bastard.
Interesting at Villa Park that they don't actually have dugouts, and they also don't have benches for anybody to sit on by the looks of things. There's a wall with no roof to it, with a metal railing that everybody just stands and leans on to watch the game. So that's unusual, at least at Leeds. There's a bit of shelter and a bench. But yeah, I mean, it's not like we're just blowing away Luton at the bottom of the league or Sheffield United or somebody. These are title contenders and we're absolutely destroying them.
Chapman, not done yet. He almost adds another. Dorigo breaking down the left. And it, again, so much Wilkinson-ism in this. Crossing to Chappie at the near post is Tony Dorigo. And Seeley makes a save. Presumably, all sweetness and light there with the keeper.
I think even he's losing a bit of hope at this point. Being angry is not working for him.
This was annoying though. 68 minutes. This felt like a kick in the balls when we were just running away with it. Should he have done better?
Well, he's kind of unlucky. Daly gets it off Batty, but the ball sort of ricochets quite kindly for him. I don't think he's... I'm not going to give Daly any credit. I think he's a bit fortunate to win the ball, and then he does run forward fairly well. Through ball to Atkinson, who outpaces McClelland, which is maybe
that
not...
comes as a shock.
Which is maybe not the toughest... of tasks for him. Lukic saves all right, I suppose, but it's it's a bit like the Wallace one in that it's just trickled across goal.
That's why you put it across the keeper, isn't it?
Leaves the tap in there for Dwight York.
There's probably more blame on this for Batty because Gordon Cowans has just come on in place of that nonsense Mark Blake. And when Daly takes the ball off him, for some reason, Batty's next act is to try and sort of climb up Gordon Cowan's face. And I'm not really sure what he's trying to achieve. It's sort of, he'd maybe try and stop Tony Daly from running away with the ball, but instead he just kind of goes running full pelt into, I think he's maybe, oh, Cowans has just come on. I think I'll let him know I'm here. By
I wasn't sure if that was, who was the aggressor there, because I wasn't sure if Cowans was involved in it as well.
They just, but this is it. Batty is concentrating on having an off the ball 50-50 with a very old man. Meanwhile, the one thing that we don't want to happen is Tony Daly playing a very good through ball to Daly and Atkinson, because part of the payoff with Fairclough following Daly around is that you are leaving McClelland up against Daly and Atkinson, and he will do it for pay. I think we'd been trying to keep him more on Cyril Regis, so the two veterans, to be kind, would be looking after each other. And there is a bit of that. I think it's right at the start of the game, McClelland kind of goes up for a header and comes down holding Cyril Regis's neck, and Regis has turned to the referee like, come on, he's been doing this to me for 20 years. Are you going to do something about it? No, play on. There was a penalty shout as well for Lee Chapman in the second half where he went down onto a McGrath challenging guy, turned to the referee with his arms spread open. Nobody else said a word. It's get up, Chappie. We're not having that. So, yeah, it's one error. And then Lukic is very exposed. He does his best, I think.
The nice thing with the horrible memory of the Sheffield United home game where we were massively in control and then they got a goal and it all turned to shit for a while. Nice in this one that they score. It lifts the crowd a little bit, but then essentially nothing else happens to them.
It's that little sniff, isn't it? But yeah, I thought we managed it really well.
We just remain in control and we nearly score again. There's a nice, late in the game, young man Gordon Strachan still bursting his lungs, getting onto a good through ball from Gary Mack, which he just skews it a little bit wide, just drags it.
It's ridiculous. Some of the work ethic in the last 5-10 minutes of this match, considering we're 3-1 up, we're pretty comfortable, and a lot of our players are quite old. the effort and the tackling and, Gordon Strachan slide tackling Steve Staunton in the left back position. You don't have to, Strach. Just, you could not, but he always will.
It's great, the hunger. And that lifts our crowd too, doesn't it, you see? It's just, it has that real effect of carrying us through to the final whistle. And while we did manage the game really well and we're still 3-1 up, and, as the clock ticks on, you start to get that sense that the win will be ours. Always nice just to bookend the game with a goal last minute, because it has that huge effect, that feeling of release, doesn't it? Where you know that's it, the game's over. You thought you had a sniff, but we've put it to bed now, 4-1 in the final minute.
In front of the away end as well. It's just a nice way to cap off a day out for people, isn't it? But again, this is, again, Strachan running relentlessly. He runs through midfield with the ball, passes to Sterland, into the middle. Chapman's there.
Yeah, no one marking.
You know the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they have...
He's in his corridor. His head. What happens?
Yeah. He's in the corridor by himself on this occasion. They've obviously completely given up and they're like, oh, well, 3-1, 4-1, whatever.
It's still one of the classic Lee Chapman finishes, even though he's got the room. I mean, he's what? Is he 14 stone and 6'2"? And he manages to get himself completely airborne and maneuver balletically like a missile. There's some mixed metaphors for you. But he does all that stuff to get on the end of this cross from Mel Sterland. And again, going back to the how much of this is kind of Sheffield Wednesday old boys doing the thing, I'd love to get a breakdown on just how many goals Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds scored of just Sterland crossed to Chapman header, Sterland crossed to Chapman header.
It works.
And it works and it's beautiful. It's the cross is absolute perfection, and the athletic ability to head it so powerfully through the hands of Seeley. It's above him. He doesn't have a chance. He can't even get close to it. It's
roof of the net header is satisfying to see, isn't it? Just the way it goes in
with such power.
I think it's nice as well with these goals. I think that all four goals combined are probably about 12 yards out. They're all from such point blank range, but it's the best place to score from. As an attacking coach will tell you, if you're really close in, you're more likely to score.
Mm-hmm. It's easier, isn't it?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I get that. 6 goals in his last game, 3 games against Villa, for Chapman, which is great against the so-called best centre-half in the world.
Contrasting with Gary Lineker, who mentions on Coventry that he's never scored at Villa Park, even as a schoolboy.
Ah,
so just yet more evidence that Lee Chapman is the man to replace him for England and improve the team.
Another little minor bit of happy narrative that occurred with this. Obviously, Tony DiRigo had played for Villa before he went to Chelsea, and then we signed him. Just one or two little boos ringing around Villa Park when his name was announced before the game, but he gets Man of the Match. Lineker awards him Man of the Match in this one.
Everyone is brilliant. I mean, DiRigo is excellent in this, but I think it's one of those games where you would struggle to say anyone was below a seven. Lots of eights and nines about Strachan, brilliant. McAllister as well in midfield. Sterland putting in some great crosses and getting a goal. Just the whole Wallace getting his tapping, which is,
really good.
It's a goal still.
Actually, he was very dangerous up against Villa's back four. And I think DiRigo stood out because with so much of Daly and Fairclough happening in the left back area, DiRigo, a lot of the time, you know, he had to get out of the way and was sort of playing in midfield. They kind of swapped over. It wasn't a case of DiRigo just standing at left back whenever Fairclough and Daly came into his own. So it meant Aston Villa then had this new concept to deal with of our left back playing in their midfield while their right winger is essentially being pushed off the pitch. And that's why Gary Lineker said it on commentary that if he could have given Man of the Match to Howard Wilkinson for this one, he would have. Because
well, he should have, the idiot.
Well, he's not a player. You give it to a player.
Oh, right. Is that the rule?
That's how
it works. Right,
okay, so he also did say that he might have given it to Lee Chapman if he'd waited 2 minutes and seen the fourth goal.
he's not really very good at the old TV stuff, is he, Lineker? Should stick to playing.
A bit wooden, I thought, in his delivery.
Mm.
No charisma, really. But, you know, not a bad choice for Man of the Match. DiRigo's ace. He's a good player. And Wilkinson, obviously, happy with that. And, you know, points out that the pitch wasn't great, but it was about making room, time and space to play in those conditions. So, yeah, I thought we would manage the game brilliantly from start to finish. And it means we're not quite title favourites, but we are top of the league. Our odds are now 5-2. They've been
slashed.
Yes. Man United, though, still the favourites at 11-8. And just having a quick look through the weekend's results. Everton beating Notts County 1-0. Luton 2-2 with Man City. Man United 2-1 against West Ham. That was the important one to watch this weekend. Norwich 3-2 against Coventry. Forest beat Palace 5-1. QPR lost 3-1 at home to Oldham. Sheffield Wednesday 1, Arsenal 1. Southampton beating Chelsea 1-0. Spurs losing at home to Sheffield United. Wimbledon 0-0 with Liverpool. And then on the Sunday game, obviously we beat Villa, which leaves us on 17 games played and 36 points at the top of the table. Man United have played a game fewer. They've only lost one game like us, but they've got 35 points. So if they win their game in hand, they will go above us. But that gap's starting to open up now to Man City in third, 6 points behind us. You've got Villa on 27 points now, 9 points behind us. So
a two-horse race.
Is it looking like a two-horse race for you as we head in towards the new year?
I mean, Man City can't be dropping points at Luton, can they?
And what I will say, actually, if you look at some of the numbers here, is that, you remember Man United started running away with it, statistically speaking, at the start of the season. Just look at our goal difference. We've scored 31, but we've only conceded 13 now in those 17 games. So we've got a positive goal difference of 18. Man United have scored 25. They've only conceded 8, which is still very ridiculously low. But it just does feel like we're getting closer to them because their goal difference, one worse at 17. So
it's because we have good strikers and they have Brian McClaire.
A happy day. What a day. Brilliant to see that on telly, wasn't it? For the world, the nation to see.
I'm glad I recorded it on my VHS. Yeah. Watch that again later.
You can keep that tape.
Mm.
But don't you go recording Michael Jackson's new video over that. If you do, it'll be very, very disappointing. As good as it is, I think we should stick with Leeds United, don't you? And we'll round off the rest of November. On the 30th, we'll return back to Elland Road, playing Everton at home in the league. Fingers crossed for another table-topping performance. We'll see you in a bit.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.